Hey, Larry, you want to kick us off?
I know it's been a while, maybe I could.
You guys, but I think in that in your update on Friday, you guys have a deal in the contract?
We had one. We didn't have one, and now we have one again.
Okay.
Kind of a squirrely situation.
Okay.
And if I share it, my take on it, maybe the others will benefit from it. I don't know. But the woman that has it wants to sell it, but she wants to sell it as is. She refuses to put any more money into it.
Yep.
They squirreled out on me because I put some things in the contract, said that, you know, I'd like to have access to the house from day one, closing 75 days. And she really balked at all of that. So I just backed up, and hopefully she would get enough sense to realize that, you know, and we're going to put $5,000 earnest money down. And
yeah.
I think they may have realized that if she signed a contract with a realtor, they don't have any earnest money down. They don't have any, you know, motivation to, other than put it on the MLS and, you know, see what fish bite at it. And even then, I think 95% of the market is not going to like the house because that 5%, the ones that can buy it as is, will have to be a cash buyer with the vision to be able to fix it up. The other people are doing the bank dance, and that will just jerk her through. And eventually, they're gonna, you know, her realtor's going to say, well, you're going to have to put the money into it. So I think they may have thought about that, and we've got to send them a contract tomorrow. It's kind of a iffy
You have a verbal from them then on a price?
Yeah, I have a verbal. They wanted me to send the contract tomorrow.
What price do you have it for?
I have it for $134,500.
Okay, and how much work does it need?
I estimated $50,000 worth of work, and in the market
it's
1,800 square feet, got a full basement. A lot of things, the bathrooms we thought would have to be totally redone until we looked at the tile, and the kind of tile in there is coming back. We see it in the store, so, you know, we just cut out the tubs and put a tile tub, get rid of the, you know, plastic tubs.
Yep.
And that might be, but that's not my game plan. I've got some some, you know, contractors here that are looking for houses, and I'm just going to wholesale it to them for $150,000.
Okay, so you have it at $135,000. What's the ARV? Is this a fix and flip, right, and not a rental?
No, it's a fix and flip.
What do you think?
And the reality, if I fixed it up, I'm estimating it'd be worth $220,000.
Okay.
And I don't know who would praise it or whatever would go into it because it's a 1970, mid-70s house. Has never had any work done on it. It's got the original shag carpet. So, you know, to put a value on it, if the, you know, comp in the neighborhood, you're looking at square feet, it's not going to match. There's a, you know, there's a gut feel there that, you know, somebody's going to have to feel that one out.
Right. Well, I'm just running some numbers here. So if I'm your end buyer and I buy it for $150,000, and I have to put $50,000 into it, I'm all in at $200,000 minus carrying costs, cost of money, that kind of thing, to sell it at $220,000, unless I have a cash buyer and no agents, that's a losing proposition. So do those numbers go higher?
Well, they could. And the one that's looking to buy it is a friend. He's a realtor, but he's working with a pretty good top investor. They got about 6 houses under renovation.
Okay.
So they've got the economy of scale, and they've got a, you know, few other things doing with them. I don't think they would probably put $35,000 into it.
Yeah.
To get it up to speed. But when we originally looked at it, I brought that one of their investors in with us to look at the house and let him give me his opinion. And his opinion then is, if you get it for $150,000, we'd buy it at that price. So I just
no kidding. You already have feedback on it.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, you know,
let's get this tied up. What's that?
Well, I'm going to tie it up, but I might put a sign in the front yard for sale by owner and see if somebody might buy a little higher, because right now there's not going to be any. When I buy from her, it'll be a contract, but there's no other realtors involved. It'll just be attorney. I'll have to pay the attorney to put for escrow and my $5,000. So it could be kind of clean. It could be a quick $5,000, or it could be a lot more. Depends on how the mood is.
What do you think it rents for?
It's in that neighborhood. If it went as a rental, oh gosh, that's a hard one. I don't know. I really wouldn't put a put a value on it. Because it's hometown. I've known the subdivision. I've known all of those. And it's a transitioning. People are buying those houses, and they're upgrading them from, you know, when they're worth 150, 160, now they're worth 220, 248, 210, just depending on the house.
Yeah, here's the thing. You got to look it up because you may be able to have a dual marketing message on this. So go to are you at your computer now?
No.
Okay.
My internet's down, and I'm like, you know.
Go to Zillow. Look up the address, and then you're going to go to the listing type drop down, and it's going to default to for sale. And you want to get rid of the for sale stuff and click the for rent stuff, and it'll pull up rental comps.
Okay.
Because at 200 grand, if this is a trendy little transitional area, this can help you sell it if you have dual message. Because now when you go to talk to buyers, you can ask them, do you do fix and flip or rentals? And some will do one or the other, some will do both. And you, in each case, if it works for either, you can tell both stories about it and broaden up, go out to a wider audience. So we want to know.
Okay. I will look at that. My wife.
Yep.
Janie, that's her end of it.
I'm on, Larry. I'm here.
You're giving the information.
I set it up on Zillow. What was I supposed to? What am I supposed to do? Zillow.
Yeah. Do you know what this place rents for?
No. How do you find that out?
Yeah. Type the address into Zillow.com. This is just one of the ways.
I did.
It'll pull it up. Go to the listing tab. I think it says. I don't have it in front of me. And click it, and it'll drop down, and it'll have for sale on there. And you want to get rid of the sold comps, the for sale comps, and click the for rent data. Are you seeing that?
Once the little window pops up in the center of the house, about the house?
Click to get rid of that so you just see the property.
Oh, okay. Okay. Listing type.
Yep, it's up near the top middle. Yeah, listing
rent.
Type. Click that and it'll drop down.
Oh, buy, rent, sell? No.
Yeah, get rid of buy and sell and
listing
click rent.
Type.
And that'll pull up rental data.
For rent.
How many beds and baths is it? 3-2, 4-2?
3-2.
Okay. So, Janie, see what you can find. You can also go to rentometer.com. That'll give you a couple free ones, and then it's paid. And you can also go to Zilpy, Z-I-L-P-Y. Do a little research, listen to the call, and then let's check back in here in a few minutes and see if we can figure out what it rents for, and we'll run some numbers. Sound good?
Okay.
So let's just see if you guys can tell the story on this both ways as a flip and a rental. So
I'll let her
know when. Okay. Yeah, check back in here in a few minutes. Let me see who else has questions, and then we'll run some numbers on this thing live. Because I feel like if you had somebody tell you that they'd pay $150 for it, that's really all you need to know. But I'd be curious, Larry, obviously running your numbers, if I buy it for $150, put $50 in, I'm all in at $200, and then it sells for $220, that's a deal I'll lose money on, so I wouldn't buy it. But you have somebody that tells you, that said, I'll give you $150 for that. So what piece of the puzzle are we missing here? My guess is it'll sell higher than $220. That'd be my thought. I don't know. Maybe they think they can do the work for less.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both.
Yeah. Because you're gonna have at least a couple months carrying costs, plus unless you're paying cash out of pocket, you're going to have cost of money to a harder private money lender.
Now I'm gonna do an assignment quick as I can. Take my cash.
Well,
give them the
contract. I know you are. I'm just thinking. We always analyze deals through the end buyer's point of view.
Okay.
We put ourselves in their shoes. So, you know, you're running the numbers on this and say, hey, if I was going to sell this to me for $150 and I had to put $50 in, I'm all in at $200. I'm out at $220. That's not a deal, right? That's way too tight.
Right.
Because now you're going to bring, even if you do it for sale by owner, you're going to bring an agent in with the buyer, most likely. You're not going to sell it to a cash buyer, chances are. So you're at least coming out 3% off that 220 carrying costs, closing costs. Let's just get a full picture here. This is every deal that comes through. This is right out of module 2 on deal evaluation. You got to run them as both a fix and flip and a buy and hold. We have to identify the two anchors. What's the ARV and what does it rent for? Always. So that's what we'll do. So Janie, see what you can find, and I'll come back to you in a bit. Sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. Who else is on? Questions.
This is Terrence. I have a question.
Yeah, Terrence, fire.
Hey, man, can you just explain to me the difference between ROC, rate of cash, and rate of investment?
ROI?
Yeah,
return
ROI.
On investment and return of cash.
Return of
investment.
Yep. There you go. Yeah.
Yep. Return of cash is, so this deal right here, let's just take it, and let's say I buy Larry and Janie's deal. And what we don't know are the rents. I'm going to make one up for the sake of this. But let's just run live numbers. So they say, hey, Mike, I'll sell it to you for $150,000. It needs about $50,000 in work. Realistically, that's for a flip. If I was going to rent it, I'd probably put a little less into it. So let's say I can fix it up for $35,000, buy it at $150,000. So I'm all in at $185,000. I'm a cash buyer. I've got a couple grand in closing costs. So let's just get a couple numbers on the table here. $150,000 buy price. Plus $35,000 fix up, and we'll call it, $2,000 in closing costs. So I'm in it for $187,000, roughly $187,000. And then they come back to me and say, hey, this is a trendy little neighborhood, 1,800 square feet, 3-bed, 2-bath. You can rent this thing for $1,500 a month. And again, I'm just pulling that number out of the air. So let's do return of cash first. So $1,500. Is our gross monthly rent. We want to get to net. So take gross times 70% times 0.7 is $1,050. All right? Now, return of cash is I'm going to go all into this thing for $187,000 out of pocket. I'm going to recover that money at $1,050 per month. So my return of cash is $187,000 divided by $1,050, 178.09 months. And that's right. We think of things in terms of years. So divide that by 12, 14.8 years, return of cash. Make sense?
Yeah, I got you. Yep, that makes
okay.
Perfect sense now.
Yep, I go cash out, and then how long to get my cash back? Now, what you need to know are the rules of thumb. A really, really strong return of cash is 5 to 7 years. All
right?
When Rob was building the portfolio years ago, he wanted to return to cash in 5 to 6 years, six tops. That's really aggressive. That means he's buying really cheap. What you'll see, what doesn't even make sense to us here in Denver is people are buying rentals, and the return to cash is 25 plus years, and we think that's ludicrous, our opinion. Because you can go to other markets and you can buy all day long return of cash in 5 to 8 years if you want to build a rental portfolio. Okay? So on this particular one, with those rents and those numbers, return of cash 14.8. Some landlords will accept that. That you just have to ask. How do you run your numbers? What's how do you know when you're looking at a deal? Are you after a certain return of cash? Are you after a return on your investment? So that's return of cash, cash out divided by cash in. The other one is return on investment, so first year ROI. You can also refer to it as a cap rate, a capitalization rate. So same numbers. We're buying this thing for $150,000, putting $35,000 in, and we have $2,000 in closing costs. So we're saying we're all in at $187,000. We're still renting at $1,500. Times our 70% is still $1,050. Okay? So that's our net monthly. So let's get to net annual. So 1,050 times 12 is 12,600,
yeah,
and then
okay.
divide it by our all-in number, 187,000, equals 6.7%. So that's basically just under a 7 cap. So, again, you have to have reference. Not many will buy a 7. If it's a turnkey rental, you can get end buyers to buy somewhere between an 8 and a 12 cap. If buyers have to put work into it, meaning you're going to sell it to me and I'm going to have my crew do the fix-up, I probably want to buy it closer 14 to 16, maybe 18%.
Why does it go up in it?
If I have to do more work.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I'm just going off. Those are Rob's numbers in Memphis. They have turnkey buyers. They'll say, you know, this thing's rent ready and tenant already in place. You know, 10 to 12 cap. They can sell that all day long. 10 to 12% first year return on investment.
Awesome.
Fixed up property, buyer in place. So what that means is when Rob and Brad, when they train their salespeople, they're buying, they're running the numbers based on a 16 to 18 cap. And these are the numbers. And Terrence, I know I was talking to you just today through email. These are the numbers that all of you have to be able to run off the top of your head. There's a spreadsheet that you have access to that'll do it quick, but you have to be able to on the fly put whoever you're talking to on speaker, get your calculator out on your phone and start to run these numbers, right? Because now once you know how the math works, and I know not everybody likes math, I get it, but you've got to know how to run these numbers because you can run it the other way too, where somebody says, or maybe I'm talking to Larry and Janie and I say, you know, they give me the number. Hey, we'll sell it to you for 135. It needs 35 in work, or 150. It needs 35 in work. So I'm thinking, okay, I need $185,000 in cash. And then I say, hey, what is this thing rent for? And they tell me, you know, you should get $1,500 a month for it. I can say, okay, so what? You know, either what's the cap rate, or if I'm a 14 cap buyer, what would I pay for it? So watch this. So now I take 15. So they tell me 1,500. I go, great. That's the first thing I plug in. Times 70% is 1,050. Times 12 to get us to the first year is 12,600. And then I say, I'm building a portfolio off 14% first year rate of return. So now I divide that 12,600 by 14%, and that says my all-in price can be 90,000. And they're telling me it needs 35 grand in work. Minus 35,000 is 55. That's my max buy price. And they want to sell it to me for 135. And I say, this deal doesn't work for me. Right?
Yes.
So these are the numbers. This is for everybody. You've got to be able to rattle this off the top of your head. It does two things for you. Right? And I'm happy to keep going over it. You've got to be dialed on deal evaluation. This is the language of investing, right? It does two things. Number one, you can quickly run accurate numbers and get a ballpark. And obviously you want to know that, whether you're buying, you know, making offers so that you can wholesale the deal or you're making offers so you can buy the deal, you've got to be able to run the numbers quickly to make good, accurate offers. The second thing is when you know how to do this, you have credibility with anybody. Of any buyer's list when you can talk the language, right? We've had a lot of conversations on Office of Ours about this, but I've played golf for a long time. So I can have a conversation with somebody about golf, and within 30 seconds, I have an idea how long they've been playing the game and kind of what their level is. And we can all do this with different things that we've been around for a long time, right? People who I've never been hunting in my life. People who hunt, they could tell through a conversation that I was clueless, right? And it's just the way. So we all have areas of expertise. When you know how to run the numbers like this, it tells other legitimate investors and people that this, you know, this person speaks our language, and it boosts credibility. This is why the Module 2 stuff is so important. So while we want to get through it with everybody quick, you've got to know how to run these numbers. And for some of you who like math, it's a lot easier to pick up. If you don't, that's why we got to practice. So, does that make sense, Terrence?
Yes, it makes perfect sense. And just to be clear, you're saying that most investors won't buy the ROI can't be under 7%. That's like the low ball number.
A lot of them. Well, return of cash. It just depends. It just depends. That's why you ask. So when you get buyers on the phone, you're having a conversation. Where do you buy? What do you buy? How do you run your numbers? You know, are you looking to buy flips or are you building a rental portfolio? So if they're looking to buy flips, great. You know, what kind of profit spread are you looking for? You know, you're trying to make what, at least 20, 25? How do you run your numbers? If they're buying rentals, you know, I'm going to say, Terrence, how do you run your numbers? Are you looking for a specific return of cash, a first-year investment? How do you know when you're looking at a deal? And so what you want to pull out of buyers is, what is their formula? How do they run the numbers? Because that way, what we want to do, is, when you have your wholesaler hat on, you have got to be running numbers through your buyer's point of view, right? Here's my buyer's formula, right? So I know I'm talking to you, Terrence, and you tell me, you say, Mike, I'm looking for 14 cap rentals, and I don't mind doing a little work, right? So I'll, you know, I've got crews that'll, you know, it's mostly cosmetic, but our typical construction budgets are 15 to 35 grand on the high end. And I say, great, so I can bring you a property that needs some work. You say, yep, all day long. I just want a 14% return on my money first year. Bam. So I know how to run the numbers now. That thing shows up, and again, back to Larry and Janie's deal, and I run it, and it's like a 6.9 cap. I say, I can't take this deal to Terrence. He buys 14. You know, this isn't a high enough rate of return. So rule of thumb, again, I'm just giving you ballparks. Return of cash. 5 to 7 years is really aggressive. 7 to 10, you'll find a lot of buyers will be okay with that. They can get their money back inside of a decade. Return on investment, first year ROI and cap rate, they're basically one and the same. Somewhere in that 10 to 16 to 18% range, typically. But you'll get buyers who will say, you know, 8% is fine. Just that's why you ask, so you know.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is why you want to have conversations with buyers constantly and be asking them these questions. How do you run the numbers? What are you looking for? How do you know when you're – Terrence, how do you know when you're looking at a deal? And then just let them tell you. So, and then that's where in FreedomSoft, you're taking notes on these people, and you go over and you hang on to that because you want to know who to call when you have a deal. And now you'll call up, right, Terrence? You tell me, hey, I'm looking to buy 14 cap single family homes, and I call, you know, I've got a deal tied up, and it's a 14.9 or a 15, whatever. And now I don't have to call up and say, Terrence, I maybe have a deal for you. I call up and say, Terrence, I've got one that's right up your alley.
Gotcha.
And it changes the confidence level that we have those end buyer calls with, because now I know what you're looking for. And I say, I found, you know, I've got one. Here's the address. Here are the numbers. Here's what I'm selling it for. Here's what it needs. Even taking 30% off the top, this is a 14.7 first-year rate of return. When can you go see it? That's why we want to know. All that makes sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great question. I mean, this is the stuff that we just have to drill, right? Again, this is going back to some high school and college math, and for most of us, that, you know, that was a while ago. So we have to pull those percentages out again and start figuring that out. So
I've been so used to, you know, just finding people fixing flips. I've never really engaged into the rental market, so this is all kind of brand new to me.
Yeah, and this opens up a whole new here's why Rob and Brad are working a turnkey rental market in Memphis. That, ready? This is rocket science. Write this down. Because that's what buyers in Memphis want. And I kind of say that jokingly. Right? But when you know, when you talk to buyers and you get a feel for, hey, this is what the locals in this market want, and when you know how to run the numbers, you can just say, you guys want turnkey rentals? Great. You want this? I can find you that. You want to build a portfolio? I can find you that. And so what they're doing now is the buyers in Memphis want turnkey rentals. So they say, okay, that's what we'll bring you. So they're running their marketing to vacants. They're getting properties under contract. They're wholesaling the property to the end buyer. And then they say, we'll manage construction for you too. So you can pay us X amount. We'll fix it up, right? And that either they'll help put a tenant in place or Rob and Brad, and I explained this, it gets a little bit complicated, but they are the tenant and then they're subleasing it. So the market said, this is what we want. And they said, cool, we'll figure out how to bring you that. And they bought 9 houses last week for the previous. I think they sold 4 last week. And they're just moving at this, you know, multiple deals every week out of one. They're really focused in one market. That's it. They're just bringing the buyers what they want. So I don't want to get too, I explained sort of the details of what they're doing. It's not really important on how they have it all put together because I want everybody to stay focused on find deals, make offers, get in the middle of deals, find buyers, and get to the closing table. But once you know how to do that, what, you know, my whole point here is you can work multiple exit strategies when you just understand how buyers run numbers. And so that's what Module 2 is all about and why we have to be good at it. Everybody clear on that? It's Terrence, you asked a great question.
Thank you.
And it's one that I want to make sure that everybody knows how to do. And you just have to run scenarios on a calculator until you're dialed, until you understand it and you can do it lifetime. And then this is what you're going to train eventually your salespeople to do, right? Because you want them to go right to offer eventually. And so initially what you'll have them do is set an appointment for you to call the seller back and make the offer. But over time, you can train them to run the numbers real quick, and you can just tell them, hey, this is where we need to be to buy. And they can gather the data with the seller and say, hey, give me one second here, and either use the spreadsheet that we built or just pull up the calculator on the phone, type it in and say, you know, for a deal like this that needs that much work, we can make you cash offer today of $29,000. Does that number work for you? So that's where we're going with all of it, speed and accuracy. Good question. Anything else, Terrence?
No, not at the moment.
Okay. Who else? And Janie, if you have some rental data, let's jump in, because I always good to talk about live deals, for sure.
Okay.
Were you able to find some? Yeah.
That area would be 1,200 to 1,500 a month rentals.
Yep. So that's going to be tight. I mean, you saw I ran the numbers at 1,500, which is the high end. So that's going to be a tight little rental. So what I really want the two of you to do is dial in these numbers, because a deal that I can write that you're going to sell for 150 that really needs 50 grand in work to then retail sale at 220, that deal's tight. So again, Larry said you may have a buyer that already told you, hey, I'll give you 150 for this thing, in which case, knock yourself out. You know, you're not going to argue somebody out of the deal if they can come in and fix it up and flip it. But let's get some more data on the comps, because if this is a trendy little part of town, you know, maybe this thing does sell for more than 220. So, but this is an important part, because this is where you're gonna tell the story. Facts tell and stories sell. So when you go to buyers, you're gonna include the facts, but you're gonna lead with the story. And the story, right? It doesn't have to be right. It's not like we have to write some script, but you know, hey, this is a great little 3-bed, 2-bed house. It's a good size. It's 1,800 and whatever square feet. You know, definitely needs some work, but we're selling it for $150,000. You know, maybe there's room to add another bedroom in there. It is 1,800 square feet, hard to say. But you're just going to build a quick little story around the house and then deliver it that way when you're on the phone with somebody. So
okay.
Yeah, my mind's clicking on that. You know, the outliner on there is it's got a large unfinished basement that the concrete after from the 70s, there's not a crack in the concrete. No leak.
Yeah, that's
nothing.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
that
like
was
it.
A positive looking at it. I said, that's nice.
It
and
absolutely
it's,
is.
And the downstairs is studded in for a bathroom. Pipes are there.
So let me ask, is it 1,800 finished square feet now without the basement, or is it like a ranch with a full basement, nine up, nine down?
No, up 1,800 finished. Down.
Okay, so how big is the basement?
Jane, what do you think the
I think
the
it's
height
full.
Of it?
The full
well,
height.
It's full, but the height of it due to the mechanical system cuts off probably 35% of it. Drops the ceiling too low.
So here's a really good question: is the ceiling high enough to be considered livable square footage in that town?
Absolutely.
Is? Beautiful. Is it a two-story or a ranch?
Ranch.
Okay. So this is a big old basement, and you're saying it might be a full basement. Even if it's not, it's at least another 1,000 square feet, right?
Easily.
Okay, so now we're telling a whole different story. Here's, watch this. Larry and Janie, here's what you do to this thing. It's an 1,800 square foot ranch with an unfinished basement. The comps are coming in, right, with just 1,800 finished square feet. But you can go in and finish the basement for, right, it's a basement, so it gets done cheaper. Add another two bedrooms, another full bathroom, probably a wet bar and a seat, whatever. Knock yourself out down there. Now this 3-2 just turned into a 5-3, and here's what the comps look like in your area. That's your story.
We, Janie, tell them the comps on the other that finished the basement that went for 248.
That's a whole different game.
Yeah, thanks for putting me on the spot there, Larry.
You have your notes. We're 60 miles away from each other, and I've got the note somewhere.
Yeah.
Hey, even if you fumble a little on here, Janie, you're among friends, so don't even sweat it.
We're not.
That's the story of this thing right there.
Yeah, that's what I think the one that helped us look at in the back of his mind. He didn't play it up, but he took a lot of time in the basement looking at it. He's the one that said no cracks, no leaks, no this, no that. The poles are this one.
Well, this totally changes it. Now you sell me this house for $150. And I, you know, worst case, I put 50 into it. Or, I mean, even if I have to put a little bit more, you know, I do a nice job on this thing, and I can get the sale price up to the mid-2s. Now, for a cash buyer, this starts to work all day long. For somebody with financing, obviously, it gets a little bit tighter, but.
Yeah, I've got it. It was just down the street. 5-bed, 3-bath, 2,300 square feet, sold, well, this was last year, June of last year, for $258.
Yeah, it needs to be. That's really positive because your market probably hasn't dipped. If anything, it's probably gone up in this market. But you need comps within 90 days, 6 months max. That's really promising, though. Because you can make this a 5-bed, 3-bath. That one's 2,300 total. You're probably at 2,800 total, and it sold for just under 260. See how this is building the – that's why the buyer, Larry, said, I'll give you $150 for this thing. Because they know there's $100,000 in there, and they can fix it up for $40,000 to $60,000. And there might be $110,000, $120,000. In there minus the fix up. Now we have a solid fix and flip, right?
Yeah. And
my guess is
that was just one of the ones that the wholesalers, we're a member of a local RIA club that has connections in Atlanta, and we've talked enough over the years that they bring me a deal, show it to me, we'll buy it. So, you know,
I love it.
The confidence level, that's why we joined your program, because you got buyers in different towns. If we do the things right, we can sell it. bottom line.
So, yeah, let's really use this deal to fine-tune and hone in. You know, how do we run the numbers? How do we put our story together? What's the demographic in this area? Families buying there or
families.
Single people? It's families?
Families.
This is all day long.
Yeah.
Now you're telling the story. Listen, the demographic here is for families. So it's a ranch with a full basement, which is a perfect case scenario. If the family has young kids, they keep them upstairs on the same floor. If the family has older kids, they want to be in the basement, finish out the basement, put two more bedrooms, probably a Jack and Jill down there that you can enter, you know, that has three entrances, one from each bedroom and then one, you know, general. And they said this thing will sell all day long to the families in this area.
Yeah.
Now
big
we're,
lot.
Now we're piecing the story
a big
together.
Lot and a creek on the backside. Other thing, waterfront.
It's beautiful. Cool. So let's get this sucker tied up. You'll have contract in place tomorrow?
Janie, will you have the contract in place tomorrow?
Yeah.
You have a verbal acceptance, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And the contract's over. We like it.
Okay.
They're looking at one thing, and that, on the contract, they're looking at the price we agreed on. They're looking at the time frame to get it out of the way, 60 days, and they're looking at an escrow, and you know, no bumps and anything else. That's their hot buttons. And I guess, and like I said earlier, they don't want the owner does not want to put any money into it. She's in a assisted living. She don't want to pull out of her CDs or anything.
Yep, that's perfect. Here's the thing that I love about unfinished basements. Unfinished basements are value adds because you get to buy the property as is, which is not livable square feet.
Mm-hmm.
If you fix it up, you get to sell it as the property now is. And a lot of times, you know, any rehabber that has good pricing on construction can make more per square footage than they can fix an unfinished basement for. So it's one of those areas where you can make margin, you can create margin.
Well, that brings a question to mind. Your quote has said previously that you had construction comps in 700 cities, so that if we really want to know, what's it going to cost to do a basement in Athens, Georgia? Do we have access to that type of information, or do we have to rely on our network in town? Because my thought is, if it's in Tampa, I want to make sure that I can call somebody and say, what's it going to take to fix this house up?
Yeah. The estimator is going to get you in the ballpark. That's what it's designed to do. At the end of the day, you take that estimate to, you know, GCs in the area. If you're doing the fix, you'll do it. You say, hey, we ran some quick numbers. Here's what they look like. Let's see what you come up with, right? If you're out of state and you're wholesaling it, all you need is a ballpark. Say,
right.
Hey, I ran some preliminary numbers on this thing. You know, I think it's 50 to 60,000 to fix up the upstairs and finish off the basement, based on a few different things. But you know, go check the house out. Bring your GC with you. So you don't have to be dialed, because if you send four GCs to a contract and tell them to bid the job, you're going to get four different prices.
Yeah,
that's all there is to it, right? So you don't have to be perfect. You just have to be ballparked so that you can have an intelligent conversation with a contractor if you plan to buy it, or with an end buyer if you plan to wholesale it. And that's what the estimator was designed to do.
Okay.
Yep.
That works in place. I'll let other people talk, and then I got another question.
Yeah, let's fire. Let's get through it.
Okay. We've got a blip through, I don't know which other real estate, and it was a dialogue of a father and son that were in a certain business. They have been going to Philadelphia, renting a hotel room for $200 to $300 a night, and renting a conference center to bring their people in. Son said, I can do better. Daddy shut his mouth. Son went out a few, but still within Uber and public transportation distance in Philadelphia, bought a house, turned it into an Airbnb where there was enough room to be able to have a conference room into it, use it for their, you know, their facilities when they need it and then rent the rest of it out. And
okay.
That got my mind thinking, Atlanta, such a big conference center, you know, I understand the transportation. Is anybody else doing that, thinking of it, or is that something that we can research to find out?
I don't know if you mean, is that something else you mean inside the group, or is that just something that somebody else is doing?
Well, inside the group, you know, we're going to run into different things. You know, we're very focused right now. I want the bread and butter, $100,000 house, buy it for 30 and get it down the road.
Yep.
But I don't know if anybody had touched on that as the trend continues.
Yeah, I don't know that we've had the Airbnb conversation inside the group yet. Here's the thing about it, and it's relevant, but it's not. What we're going to focus on is finding deals, making offers, and getting them under contract. Once that is in place and that is moving, you want to buy some Airbnb properties, knock yourself out. You want to do turnkey rentals, knock yourself out. You want to do fix and flip, knock yourself out. You want to keep wholesaling. It doesn't matter, and this is what we talk about on our orientation call. You can put whatever you want on top of the cake if you build the foundation right. And so our focus is always going to be on generate good leads, get on the phone with them, get a salesperson on the phone with them, right? Really streamline the system so it gets under contract. Now, I've heard a lot of investors talking about the Airbnb opportunity and, you know, where to put it and that kind of thing. Here's the deal. Some people think it's the latest, greatest. Other people don't want to touch it. They're like, no, I don't want to manage people constantly in and out. Give me somebody that'll put a 3 to 5 year lease on this place so I don't have to worry about it. So it's just a flavor preference, really. But what we know is when you build the systems underneath it, you can do just about whatever you want on top. So that's always going to remain our focus.
Okay. Yep. Point well taken.
But yeah, I think there's some Airbnb potential. So Darren in the group, I don't know if he's on tonight, but they own a little place on the lake in Cleveland. And it's got some of that interest. They fixed it up really nice. They have one of the pitchers for the Indians rented it last year. I think wants to rent it again. And so they've kind of gotten in that route. But it's got this kind of Airbnb high end rental flavor to it. So they're putting some of that in place. But when the foundation is there, Larry, you can do whatever you want.
Okay.
And that really is a, you know, I wouldn't look so much as, hey, Airbnb's the trend. Is that what you want? Let's not chase it because it's the trend. Let's sit back and think, do we want to manage, you know, a short-term rental and somebody wants to come for 2 nights or 3 nights, whatever the case? And that's either a yes or no. If no, who can we find to manage it for us? If we find a reputable company, what are they going to charge? You know, some people want it, some people don't. So they just, you know, yeah, there's opportunity, but there's opportunity all over the place. I mean, you can just wholesale if you want. Find your Airbnb buyers and say, hey, I'll bring you properties you guys can fix up in Airbnb. I'll just feed you. So, yeah.
That's why we bought the program. The wholesaling is appealing.
What do you want? That's the question. What are you trying to build? You know, Rob. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just gonna say, when you wholesale, you can do whatever you want on top, whatever that looks like.
I think Janie and me both want the idea of the wholesale, run the organization, get it done,
yep.
Make the deal,
yep.
Get behind it, put the money in a sock, do the other stuff with it, so that at any given time, we can stop for a week or two and go play.
Yep. And you can set up, right? We talk about it all the time, systems and wholesaling. Wholesaling will generate cash. Now, some people, they want to stop there, and that's fine. Just put a system in place that keeps spitting off cash. Others will say, I'm going to let wholesaling generate cash, and then every 5 to 8 deals, based on how many, you know, what you're making on them, I'm going to pay cash for a rental. and then I'm going to put one into a passive portfolio. Other people will say, hey, I'm going to wholesale a couple, right? I was telling everybody last week that Rob and Brad, they're working a turnkey, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm having a brain cramp. A turnkey system in Memphis, but they came across two that they ran the numbers on, and they said, wow, if we just fix these up and sell them retail, these are $40,000 to $50,000 paydays. And so they said, we're not even selling. We're not even going to put these out to our buyers list. We're just going to take them down. They're managing construction on rentals anyway. So Andrew just moves in and fixes up two other ones, and then they'll sell them retail. So they can just do a, hey, look at what we just found. Let's not sell these. You know, we can turn a huge check on the back end if we just fix them up and flip them. So let's do that. And the reason they can do that is because they're wholesaler. That's why we want to sit in that position, because you get to pick and choose which deals go where, put you in the driver's seat. So, yeah, let's get the systems up and running, right? Consistent lead flow, offers being made at least weekly. Our goal is daily, and start turning on the cash engine. And then the conversation about, okay, what do you really want out of this, becomes a lot easier because the foundation's in place. So that's where we focus.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
These calls are being recorded. How do we access the recorded calls?
Just log into the coaching center. It says office hours on the left side.
Okay.
And they're just in there by date. I think I still have to upload Thursdays from last week. Who else? Good questions, as always. Who else is on?
Okay.
Yeah, Micah. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Yeah, Micah's. Yeah, no, you go ahead. It's Clark, Mike.
Hey, Clark.
Yeah. Just pursuing our email back and forth here. I still can't see how to get it in there, the photos.
Yeah, so all I did was I grabbed a picture of a couple moose that we saw a few months ago up in Estes Park. I copied and pasted, right? I just opened up that in my phone. Instead of texting an image, you can email it. I'm using an iPhone. And then I pasted, Stanford? Stanford's.
Yeah.
The email address tied to that campaign in there, put in 123 Main Street as the address line and click send. That's it.
Well, it's not working. I don't know why.
When you send it or him?
Well, I tried sending one from my, like, the gallery of my computer, chose a picture.
Yep.
And then I pasted the Freedom Soft address on the email address and sent it, and the picture didn't come through. And then I tried it from my phone. If I do it from my phone, it goes through, straight from my phone. He's trying it from his phone, and he sent it to me on my email, and I get it. I get the picture. He sent it to FreedomSoft, and it doesn't come through. The picture doesn't come through.
Yeah,
so I'm not sure what he's doing wrong.
I'm not sure either. The only thing I can think is it's user error. That's my only guess. Because when I go in and try it, it works like it should.
Is it could be an iPhone, Android thing?
Shouldn't be. I mean, you can email a picture off an Android.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
So it shouldn't be. You're going to have to get him
okay,
on live time and go have him put on speaker.
Yeah, I'm going to call him after this is over and try to straighten it out.
Yeah, you got to have him tell you step by step what he's doing. It's got
to
be.
But the stuff that he emailed me, I tried to forward to the FreedomSoft account, and it didn't go through.
What do you mean? Did the lead get created?
The lead did, but the footer didn't go through.
Did you tell when you click forward? Did you tell it to include the attachment?
Well, it was the attachment that I forwarded.
Yeah, that's why I said to send an email into the coaching center so I can try it. So you need you've got to have your bird dog going straight to FreedomSoft though. That's what we need to troubleshoot. Let's not even worry about it. If it goes into your email, because that's a broken system, because it requires you. and we want you out of it. So tell him to go step by step with what he's doing, because that's where the breakup had. And somebody on here has to have an Android. That, I mean, I'm pretty sure you can just email an image. I know you can.
Well,
I've never owned
one. I've done it with mine for FreedomSoft, and it goes through. So.
Oh, you're on, yeah. So if you can do it, but your bird dog can't from your phone, it's just an operator error thing. They're doing something wrong.
All right, I'll talk to him live after this. I'll talk to Shudo.
Okay.
Thank
Sounds
you.
Good. Keep
okay.
me posted. Yep. All right, who else?
I'll jump back in. A little background. My son lives in Tampa, Florida. He runs he's 47 years old, runs a successful marketing company, multifaceted marketing, but his mainstay had been street marketing. He would get, you know, whether a restaurant's opening up, he'd put people on the street, hand out samples, do that kind of stuff. And his marketing campaign I was comparing with, he's got, I forgot which one of the sports teams, and they go to each bar, he would assign them this street, this bar, these places, and all his street people would have to go in there, talk to a manager or somebody, get them to agree for them to give them away some stuff and put up a poster.
Okay.
And I told them what I was looking for somebody to ride around and find the abandoned houses and document it for $3. And he questioned the $3 because the person had to think to where to drive to versus where he had to direct his people to, and, you know, they did it. So, you know, I don't know if different markets have a different value on it. You know, you've set the market at $3 to pay them, whether it be in wherever. So I don't know if there's a sliding scale there, if you run into any pushback on some and other ones that you get by with $2.
Yeah, you can pay whatever somebody will go do, but I got to clear something up. So we're absolutely telling them where to drive.
You're giving a zip code. I realize that.
Yeah. Here's the thing. If you may get somebody to do it for two. If you're in a neighborhood or a city where you've got a lot of vacants, I mean, you know, Robin and Brad, they'll send bird dogs around Memphis, and there'll be, you know, on a typical block, there are multiple, two or three.
Oh, yeah. Like Gary,
so
Indiana.
They're all over the place. You go to Denver, tell somebody to drive for vacants, and they're going to have a hard time finding them. So you would have to pay quite a bit more in Denver as opposed to somewhere else. But yeah, we start at $3 an hour and go from there. I just hired somebody else today at $3 an hour and they didn't balk. Could I've gotten two? I don't know. Here's the thing. I'm going to get good leads for $3 and then I'm going to have them skip trace, and our skip tracer can do multiple per hour. So at the most, I mean, there's no way I'm spending $5 a lead to have it generated and skip traded.
Okay.
And that's just dirt cheap for good leads.
Yeah, that was the number I was looking at for the odds, the skip trade versus the driver versus the other. You know, it costs me to buy this, and this. So I can put it in my mind. You talk about the numbers. I'm a numbers person, and those help me understand it.
Yeah, and your skip tracer, a skip tracer that knows what they're doing ought to be able to do 10 an hour. So, I mean, if you're paying them, what, $5, $6, $7 an hour, I mean, you're $3.50 per lead, probably not even that. So that's a kill. Those are killer leads for $3.50.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That doesn't exist anywhere. So, yeah, it's still, even at $3, because here's the thing, you get somebody, you know, I wired another guy $90 today. He went out and drove over the weekend for the first time, and he brought in 30. And I'm like, man, I shoot him a text, money's there. So now he knows we're serious, right? So game on. And he didn't go out very long, and he just made $90. And so, you know, you find that sweet spot between what's somebody willing to do, but at the end of the day, we're getting leads for a very low price. And so, you know, make it enough that somebody can go out and put, you know, a few extra $100 in their pocket every week, because they'll stick with you. Keep
Works
those leads coming to feed the machine. So what's that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we pay three. That's where we start. Could you pay two, maybe?
I just don't want to pay four or five. You know, that was the feedback from him being in that market area. But,
yep.
You know, I would love to prove him wrong. You know, how Father
Hey, somebody with a lot of somebody in a place where there are vacants, they ought to be able to get 10 an hour. And that's 30
Absolutely.
Bucks an hour, and that's the easiest $30 an hour they ever made. I'll tell you that, right? To go out and snip photos,
right.
Send an email. I mean, each house, when they get dialed, they sit there for 30 seconds, minute tops, snap a photo, queue it up, send an email, type in the address, click send, drive to the next one. You know, for somebody that's working a 9-to-5, getting paid, you know, 15 to 25 an hour, that's a sweet little side with little to no stress. So,
yeah, I thought the same thing. I was just getting the feedback from somebody that's in the street doing it down there. But maybe it's a different mindset because Tampa's kind of a unique town. It's the statistics on it between the age of 18 and 35, 80% of the people down there are single.
Yeah,
and so it's a hot town. My son had a lot of business connection, and he said, you know, $15 an hour, you're lucky to keep an employee. If you look at them wrong, they quit and go someplace else.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, that's people do what people do. So you just burn through a couple. But
oh yeah,
you know, 18 to 35 year olds are looking for some Friday night spending money.
Oh yeah,
tell them to hustle it up during the week.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. You'll go through a couple. That's just part of it. You know, I tell you what, they're really for places that set their clocks back. You know, you need a decent photo of the house, which has to be during you know, when the sun's out, obviously. So it gets a little tougher for people to work to go out and drive after work now. Now that we set the clocks back and it's dark at 5:30.
But, you know, that makes me think just a shift worker. If somebody works at night, they got plenty of time to get in the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so you just have to find somebody where it works. This gal today, she has 2 days off a week, one weekday and then a Sunday. And just looking for some extra cash starting on Wednesday. So, just keep talking to people. They're out there. You'll find them. Who else?
This is Terrence.
Hey, Terrence.
Hey, I just got a small question on what you guys were just speaking on. When you said you get them to take pictures, how many pictures should we be expecting? Just like outside pictures, or if they can get inside, take those as well?
Nope. Not when they're generating leads. Do not tell your bird dogs to go walk on the property because now they're trespassing because you told them to.
Okay.
So one picture of the front of the house, submit the address, and move on to the next one. You're going to go from there. Once you have a deal under contract, if you need to get back in the house and the seller okays it, you can send a bird dog to go do that, but that's a different, you know, we pay them 25 to 35 bucks based on how far they have to drive to go over there and do a site visit and either take a bunch of pictures or shoot a video of the house and then upload it to Dropbox for us. So, yeah, when they're generating leads, I mean, they can pull up in front of the house, park, roll down the passenger window, maybe zoom in a little bit, snap a photo, send an email with the address in the subject line. And they're on to the next one.
Okay.
Yep.
Is there anything besides those two things, the address and the pictures, anything other information that you require them to look at, you know, yard, neighborhood, any kind of other data that's collected at the same time for the same price?
We don't. We want the
okay.
address and the photo. And then
okay.
from there we'll go. You know, we already have an idea about the neighborhood because we've told them to go there in the first place. We have data that investors are buying there. That's really all we need to know. Are you going to tie up some that are, are maybe too beat up and maybe on the one block in the area that nobody wants? Yep, that'll be a part of it. But when you have activity in a zip code and you tell a bird dog to go drive every street and clear one zip code at a time, just like with any lead gen, they're not all going to be perfect, but there's going to be plenty in there that'll be good. So, yeah, that's all we're asking for, photo and address. Nice and simple. What else? Get everybody covered?
I'm good. Larry's good. I don't know, Janie, you all right? Everything good? If you're still there?
Yeah, I'm good.
Hey, email me tomorrow when you have that signed contract back. I'm excited. And then, game plan, you two. Get your story together. Shoot me a quick email because it's going to happen probably tomorrow with your quick story that you're going to tell on that thing, right? Who's going to be talking to buyers to get this sold? One or the other or both of you?
Larry.
Larry. So, Larry,
well,
tell me,
the buyer
tell
said
me
for
your
me
quick story.
Email it over there and finish, and I would go
what's
finish
that?
The contract, just to email her the contract with it. Everything's good, but it just wanted it. It's kind of a unique deal because I'm talking to a third party helping the buyer out that's not related to her, that's, very cautious, wanting to help this lady that she's been helping out, not a relative,
yep.
Not anything else. So it's kind of a dancing around the issue, and it adds extra steps other than just going to get the hard contract going down there, putting it down, and having them sign it. But
gotcha.
It'll get done.
Okay. Yeah, email me in the coaching email when that thing is signed, sealed, delivered. And then just give me a quick little version. I think your story needs to be something around tonight. And then let's get it, because buyers in the area, right?
Yeah.
All right. So we want end buyer contract on this sucker by Thursday. This seems like a sweet little deal. And you guys can mark it up 15, which is a killer little wholesale fee. You're just going to do an assignment?
Just an assignment. Grab
okay.
6, 7, get out of there.
Well, 6 or 7, what do you mean? You're marking it from 135 to 150, right? What's that?
I mean 143.5 to 150.
Okay. Here's the thing. If you have comps with a finished basement that are 250 to 275, which it seems like is likely, start at 150, because now somebody can go in, fix that thing up for 60 grand. They can be all in at 210, and they can move this in the mid to upper twos, and that's a sweet little flip. There's enough room in that for you guys to make a great check and for your end buyer to make a great check. So dial that in before you start talking to buyers. Let me know that you have it under contract, and tell me the story you're going to tell, because the ARV is part of the story, right? Listen, Larry, here's what you do to this thing. Buy price is 150. Here's what it is. It's a 3-2, 1,800-square-foot ranch, but it's got almost a full basement that's untouched, right? This thing was built in the mid-70s, but there isn't a crack to be found because all the basement walls are exposed. This is a killer little deal. Here's what you do. Families want to move in this area. Bam, 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 bam. If you do that, the comp data supports an after-repaired value of this price point. So send that over to me. Don't type out a ton of information. Just give me a quick idea of what your story is going to be. And
okay.
Then you're going to tell that story as many times as possible until somebody gets earnest money to the title company. Here's the other thing, too. You guys be ready for this. This is a trendy little spot. So other investors are already working there, and they're looking to buy. So you can put out bandit signs. Most of the time, bandit signs say, hey, if you want to sell your house, call this number. I pay cash. You can do bandit signs that say contract for sale in this neighborhood you know, great fix and flip. Call for details.
Make sure that neighborhood, there was a realtor that she sent out. She lives in the neighborhood, and
okay.
she sent out the same thing and got lots of responses to people wanting to sell, but they wanted, you know, I don't remember exactly what they wanted. They weren't really motivated to sell, but they threw a large price onto it. So, you know.
Hey, here's the thing, too, is maybe not that particular agent, probably not has been involved, but if you know another agent that works the area, you can absolutely have them move this to their list. Say our price is $150, put your commission on top of that. And if you bring us a buyer, we'll just put a little agreement in place. And, you know, we have the property, you can bring the buyer. You can absolutely do that. But tell them, add your commission to our price so you're not paying them.
Okay. The other question comes in. You know, I'm used to if you put a earnest money down, it goes to the, the other realtor that made the offer. The offer brings it to us or whatever. This is,
yep.
Since there is no realtor involved in me making the offer, I'm giving her earnest money. Do I get my attorney to hold the earnest money because I don't want to give it to her?
Yes. Yeah, never give earnest money. What if you follow the contract that's in the coaching center, what Rob will do with a private seller is send him a check for $10 for consideration on it. Now, this may be a little different because there was an agent involved previously. So if you show up with $10, they may think, what the heck are you trying to do here? So in that case, yes, say I'll open escrow with this title company, and that's where I'm going to submit earnest money. Don't go directly to the seller.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, if we go there, I didn't know whether to go to my closing attorney, the ones that we
Your
use.
Your closing attorney, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, title company, or we I always speak in the language of title companies because that's how Colorado works. But, yeah, title company or closing attorney.
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
We get that. Got it, Janie?
Yep.
Yeah, this is a great little deal. It seems to me like selling this thing for $150 ought to be, that price ought to be on the table. Let me know what you find with comps, and let's put it together. But
that price is on the table, but the salesman in me wants to bump it up. I'm going, who all are on my other options? He's willing to pay that.
Yeah.
What
you
are
may
the
be
other
startup? Here's the thing. Let's see what the comps say. If the comps go north of 260, then I think you can, and still leave a really good check on the back end. If those comps are high enough, you guys may want to wholesale it to yourself.
Hmm.
I mean, here's the thing: just because you guys do the fix and flip, that doesn't mean you don't make a wholesale fee. You absolutely should. Right, you got to have more than one business entity, and just have one wholesale it to the other, or assign it, or whatever you want.
I'm
Close
losing
it in house.
You're losing me on that.
Well, if I own entity A and entity B, and this is what Rob does every time, and let's say that you want to do a fix and flip, entity A is your acquisitions company. And B is your fix and flip company. A makes the offer to the seller, which you're about to get a contract back on tomorrow. Assign it over to B, and then we always use private money. So the private lender funds entity B, and we just assign it to ourselves, one business entity to the other. You still leave closing with your wholesale fee, and then entity B goes on to fix it up, put it on the market, and sell it.
Okay. We only have one LLC.
How fast can you set them up?
To have a business name, DBA,
You could do a DBA. Yep. And it's different state to state. In Colorado, we can go on the Secretary of State website and launch an LLC in about 10 minutes. Not every state's like that.
Okay.
So
here's the thing.
On this one, you probably just move it. Let's get a good payday in. Let's get to the closing table, lock this thing up, because you're going to pull more like this, but that's something the two of you want to think about. If you're going to pull down deals that have, you know, I mean, this thing potentially, I tell you what, let's start with the comps and let's see how high we think they go.
Okay.
You want comps last 90 days.
You're our resource. Drag us through it. You know, I've negotiated the deal. Let's figure out how to work the deal after that.
Yep. Well, get that address into FreedomSoft. You can just click comparable sales on the left-hand side. So start there. See what you can find. Use Zillow. You know, use the different resources, and then let me know tomorrow when that thing's under contract. What do you think ARV is with a fixed up basement?
Okay.
Yep. Good stuff. Who else? All right. I think we have everybody covered. That's my assumption anyway. All right. Hey, great stuff, everybody. As always, get any questions, obviously, next few days, get them into the coaching email. Chat with everybody on Thursday. Larry and Janie, I want this sucker under contract with a buyer by Thursday. No pressure, but then we'll go to closing day, and then we'll go to our case study where we'll record a little story about this thing. So let's make it happen. This is cool. Then we'll rinse and repeat. Keep this thing going.
Yep.
So, yeah, everybody, anytime you run into a question or anything like that, get it over, shoot an email in, right? We want as little time as possible between question and answer so we can keep things moving forward. So, great stuff as always. Everybody have a great afternoon or evening wherever you're at, and we'll chat soon.
Thanks, Mike.
Yep, take care.
Bye.